C4. Number 24A.
We come now to the chapter of Genesis. And the chapter Genesis shows us the science of creation. It is not to be confounded with the chapter creation, because the chapter on creation just gives you a picture, so to say, of what creation is, that ideas constitute creation. Whereas in Genesis, Mrs. Eddy uses that term, the science of creation, four times. She doesn't use that expression in any other chapter. Therefore, she wants to show here science of creation. Can you hear the place value? Namely, science, the vertical science, and at the point of outcome, Christianity, creation. So you have at once a sense that what she is presenting here is the ever unfolding of creation from the point of view of the one creative principle. We get here the science of creativity, really the scientific process of creativeness, creative science, so to say, creative investigation, everything that has to do with a creative sense is presented in this chapter. See, the chapter on creation didn't present a creativity, a law of creativity. It just presented, because there it was, Christianity as the word, just giving a statement of what is creation, what are the constituents of creation, and went through the seven. But now in the Genesis we have the generating sense, the Genesis sense, the generating sense of being, and therefore shows how within really the system of principle there is a constant generation going on. Now let's see the place value. We said in that vertical we start with science as the word, giving us a sense how to become a scientist. Then in the next chapter, recapitulation showing what constitutes this science, and showing that it constitutes a system, that principle expresses itself as a divine system with categories, and categories blending with categories. Therefore, that principle presenting itself as a calculus of ideas through a system. And now comes Genesis and says that system is not a static system. It's not just a system that is. That system is really the ground, the work, it's the basis, the fundamentals on which now Genesis builds. It's a system that can be restructured infinitely, and therefore every time it is restructured, it brings forth a new creation, something new. The moment we have system in restructuring, system in operation, we have structure. That's the great difference between system and structure. So many people have difficulty, and I think it is a difficulty when one first approaches the subject, to see the distinction between system and structure. A structure always needs a system to build on. The system is dead without the structure and the restructuring. So Genesis shows us the constant restructuring of that system. Or in other words, that creation is not an accreation, that creation is not taking nothing and then putting something to it, and always putting more to it, so that it gives an accretion, but that actually creation is nothing else but a new structuring, showing the constituents of being always in a new relationship, so that nothing has to be added, except that always the relationships change. It's a great change of relationships, like in a kaleidoscope, where you have always the same fundamental factors, they don't change, but with every shaking of the kaleidoscope, every time we bring movement into the system, we see a different pattern, we see a different picture. All that changes are only relationships, but never the fundamentals. This kaleidoscope is really the chapter on Genesis, where the constant shaking is going on, and that shaking is creation, it's the creative ability. Therefore, we can also see what an inventor invents, what a discoverer discovers, is not something that has not existed. All what he does is takes the already known parts, but puts them into different relationships. That's his great achievement, that he can put things together in such a way that they become meaningful. That if a chemist puts the chemical elements together in a new way, then it can be put together so that one or the other structure of it is meaningful and can give a new application. Therefore, you have in those chemical factories, they try and try over years, new combination, try it out, test it, put it away, try it out with another combination, until finally they fall somehow on a combination, on a structure that is meaningful. So not every combination in chemistry is meaningful. There's perhaps 1 out of 1,000 or 1 out of 10,000 that is bringing more meaning into the field of chemistry, which has not been seen before, but still the chemical elements are always the same, those in the which we have in the periodic table. They remain the same, no one is added, no one is taken away, no new element can be created, the elements cannot be created, you cannot invent a new element. All that can we can invent is a new combination, new relationship. With the chapter Genesis, Mrs. Eddy interprets the first and second record of creation, really trying to show the law of creativity that is in being through the first record of creation, in the second record of creation showing really that there is a counterfeit of creativity, namely if we go out from mortal mind, then we also can build up something, but that build-up, as we have seen already in physiology, that build-up builds up until finally it blows up, like in the Adam story. Whereas the first record of creation gives us the eternal law of creativity. I have put the accent on eternal, because what the Bible wants to present there, now Mrs. Eddy explains it, is not showing us a law of creativity that was at work once in creation. It's a law of creativity that is at work every moment, at every time, throughout all history. It is an eternal law, the eternal law of how to be creative in one's own life, how to go about in a situation where one needs to be creative, but also from the absolute point of view, how being is restructuring itself. There is a great tone of love and mind flowing through the first part. Here, Mrs. Eddy presents, so to say, creation from the standpoint of divine science, namely from that standpoint which says that love, the mother, embraces all. Love is all-embracing. Nothing is new to that creation. Therefore, creation is not an accretion. It is the all-embracing love, the all-embracing motherhood sense. But what is mother? Mother is that ability to bear a child. It's that ability to embrace within her womb the ever-creative law that there is a restructuring going on and bringing forth a new child. It is really that sense of a matrix in the biological sense, translated into the symbolism of the spiritual, that within the infinite containment of being, that's the mother, within the infinite containment of being, within that infinite divine womb, is actually a creation going on. We come to that very interesting statement, again a paradoxical statement at the end of the first record of creation, where Mrs. Eddy says that Deity was satisfied with her work. How could he be otherwise? And now comes the paradox. Since the spiritual creation was the outgrowth, with the term outgrowth you have a growing out from somewhere and going out, as if there would be an inner realm from which there grows out of that inner realm something outside, which really is the sense, the material sense of creation, that out of the womb comes out and separates itself a child, so that it is the outgrowth, the emanation of his infinite self-containment. So you see the paradox, there is self-containment. Out of a self-containment you cannot outgrow if it's self-contained. And yet she speaks about the emanation of infinite self-containment, paradox, beautiful paradox. Because the moment we touch the spirit, we somehow have to speak in paradoxes. Is the plural of paradox paradoxes, or, yeah, paradoxes? Just giving us the impression that within the infinite self-containment of a system, the system that includes all, there is a constant inner restructuring going on, and through the inner restructuring, the emanation, the outgrowth, we have a new creation coming to light. See, that's something quite interesting, perhaps without knowing that it has to do with this very great statement. You have felt that motherhood sense quite often during this week, namely then when you were alone and were thinking from the point of view of the synonymous terms, contemplating actually not something outside the synonymous term, but contemplating the inner meaning of the synonymous terms, and the synonymous term embracing all the ideas, and it gave you a sense of satisfaction, a sense of peace coming on you, a sense of satisfaction coming on you, because the birth was going on. So that inner satisfaction of a mother when she bears a child, which feels there is everything within me, the whole promise is within me, it's not outside, it's not somewhere up in the heaven to be called down. It's right within one's infinite self-containment, within one's infinite consciousness, all-embracing consciousness, but it's not just including, you feel something is moving within you. And it gives a promise within you. Perhaps it tells faintly already that the birth is going on, that something will happen, that there is something starting within your consciousness which will grow, which will come forth, which will manifest itself, which will be beautiful beyond words. That's a child. That's the motherhood sense which we entertain when we are at that point of what we do, restructuring what is within the synonymous term. We don't add anything to the synonymous terms. But pondering that pondering sense, that motherhood sense, that cares for the idea, that loves the idea, that adores the idea, that stands in awe before the idea, that sees in the idea all the promise, that motherhood sense begins to work, and the promise is speaking to us, is moving within us. We know the child is forming itself, is moving, and we expect any time the birth of that idea when it will gather identity and definiteness, and we can name it. Then the child is born securely, and there is no error attached to it. This is the motherhood end of the first record of creation, where God says, let there be. Well, what it is not that something else be light, but that God himself recognizes himself as being light. Let there be a firmament, God recognizing spirit, recognizing itself, that it is the purity of spirit, and therefore is not mixed up with anything outside and foreign to the divine nature. And let there be identity, let the earth bring forth, let there be identity, let there be constant reappearing of that identity, always in a new form, always in the divine form. Let there be the stars and the moon and the sun, and let that whole government of principle operate and rule every situation, rule the whole universe in life. Let there be fowls that fly above the earth, and you feel right lifted out of the material concept and the material system of reference into the divine system of reference, the fowl that fly in the open firmament of heaven. That firmament of heaven is open. You just feel there is no limit to it. It just can go on and on and on and never get to a limit, never hit the wall. There is infinite exaltation and inspiration going on. Let there be men. Let there be my ideal, my own ideal, truth's own ideal. Man is God's own consciousness of himself. Whenever we are at the point of thinking out from the synonymous term, being conscious of all those seven synonymous terms, we are God's own consciousness of himself. Whatever we call that, if we call it man, or if we call it the idea of science, or whatever we call it, it's God's own consciousness of himself going on. We just can see how this is really bringing us to the seventh day of creation, which is no more creation, but which is a sense of inner fulfillment and peace, where something says, I don't have to do anything. Let there be. Let it happen. Let there be. Let there be. And we do not interfere into the creative ability of the Infinite One, constantly bringing forth, constantly, every moment bringing forth its own idea. This is quite different than if we take the second record of creation, where in the second record of creation there is not let there be, but where there is a material creation going on, where we go out from limitation. There was a mist coming up from the earth. It's mist, it's a counterfeit of light, the first day. So it starts from ignorance, from mysticism. That too can be built up. The false sense of creation is when we go out from mortal mind, from mysticism, from ignorance, from some kind of beliefs, from the activity of our own human mind, then we build up through the human calculus a terrific big creation. And this is what the second record of creation wants to bring out, that it is the creation of error, that it is the lie actually about the first record of creation. How does she present that second record of creation? I don't go very much into the first record of creation, because there exists a terrific literature on that very point. You have John Dolly's verbatim reports along that first volume on the days of creation. So there is enough literature to know how that law of creativity works. Oh no, I'm going to tell you, just quickly. It's such a wonderful flow, you know. I like you say, if you study the seven synonymous terms, and we always go back and study them and refresh our mind, what does mind actually mean? What does spirit actually mean? We always have to go back to them and refresh them and see their identity and get a clearer and finer sense of it. But then when one has, so to say, polished the individual synonymous term, then the next step is usually that one begins to see the flow from one synonymous term to the next in the word order. And actually the days of creation is a wonderful example of how mind flows to spirit and spirit to soul, even in the human. Because, yes, without the first day and starting with mind, we do not start rightly. Why do we not start rightly? Because everything starts with light. If we start with mist and beliefs, we really don't start rightly. That's the second record of creation, you see. So we start with mind, and if we start with mind and see only that which mind sees is really mind's own creation, is God's own creation, then quite naturally something within us is pushed to spirit and says, and this divine creation of mind is the only creation. We feel a sense of the only creation because spirit is that which says to mind, you mind are the only mind, there is no other mind besides you, and we begin to separate in our consciousness really between the mind, divine mind's creation and mortal mind's creation. So we flow, so to say, from the divine mind and see that is the only mind, which is a sense of spirit, and therefore only that which mind conceives begins to unfold within ourselves, spirit unfolds, and as it unfolds within ourselves, it gathers identity. The third day tells us that the waters were gathered together. Waters is always the indefinite sense of something. You cannot mold and form water, you see. So the waters gather together until what appears. She doesn't say until a lake appears or until an ocean appears. You would expect that, she says, and then when the waters are gathered together, you have a nice lake. But she says, no, then the land appears. You see, and land is a symbol for the definiteness. So the waters change their symbolism and become earth, and the dry land appears. Everything becomes definite in our consciousness, and the identity of that idea of mind that has been unfolded through spirit comes now to the forefront and is now recognized. That identity which, now comes the second part of the third day, which reappears and reappears, which does not change. That the earth brought forth really the grass and herbs and so on that had the seed within itself. Meaning that the identity has within itself the regeneration of itself so that the identity reappears and never can be destroyed, never can disappear. We have a great sense of soul appearing and that when you say, if I start with mind and see that mind is the only mind, the only substance, that brings thought to the point of soul, of definiteness, of identity. Then, at that point, you begin to see, oh, that's okay. Now, what happens with that? It happens that they have a principle behind themselves, that every identity is an identity of its principle, and so you have the fourth day seeing that principle governs all identities of being. That principle governs us through the symbol of the heavenly stars in the first record of creation, governs everything. And therefore all is under the government of that one principle. The stars and the sun and the moon and the earth, they all gathered into one system, kept together through the relationship into one principle. And as that one principle is governing and operating, one begins to feel that takes me out of a false system of reference, that takes me out of a human government, takes me out from a human concept, and lifts me right above the earth, like the fowls in the open firmament. And I get a sense of infinite exaltation being lifted up out of matter into the reality of being. And in that reality of being, where there is no limits, where everything moves and has its being, truth comes in and says, but what is all that? All these ideas together, what are they? And you can call that compound idea man, showing that God is conscious of itself always as a totality, as a whole, and therefore that whole which the ideal truth beholds is really God's own consciousness. so that we begin to get the touch of consciousness in truth, of divine consciousness in truth, that consciousness which constitutes the whole of being. And if we have that sense that we see that truth is actually showing the whole of being, then we feel there is nothing to be added, there is no more any work to be done. So God rested in action, he felt the sense of peace and rest and said, this is okay, this is good. And we come to the point where we too feel it's fulfilled, I can rest. This is quite a different law than if we start with mortal mind. Mortal mind will do what? And the second counterfeit of the days of creation in the second record, I go now through the second record, how that builds up, shows it starts out with mist, with mortal mind, with ignorance. If it is ignorant, it cannot distinguish between spirit and matter. So the second counterfeit of the second day, the counterfeit of the second day shows the mingling of spirit and matter, of good and evil. Then it begins to see that if mortal mind is in matter, that gives sense testimony, gives sensation, then matter becomes has sensation, the counterfeit of soul. And it says, I can therefore react independently of God. Man becomes an independent creator, cut away, separated from principle, the false sense of the fourth day, cut away, whereas in the heavenly system all is hinged together. And as it cut away from principle, it has no more the life principle behind itself, and therefore begins to die away. And you have beginning and end and death coming into the second record of creation. And finally you see, instead of the creation of truth, you have the creation of self-destruction, the whole story of Cain and Abel, the self-destruction, until finally they are cast out into the land of Nod. They have no more any part in being. That's usually what happens with everything that starts wrong. That finally, though it builds up and builds up, finally it's seen to be of no value, to be no part in God. So one has to be careful about error, because error is building up wonderfully and seems to be very successful. It builds up and builds up and builds up and builds up and becomes a greater and greater monster, more to be feared, and in 1 second it just can fall flat. There's no more a value. Just uncovers itself and falls flat. So one has to be careful not to be sidetracked by that second record of creation. Yes.